Support for today's episode comes from ZipRecruiter. Finding the right hire for your open role the old-fashioned way can feel like trying to find a needle in a haystack. But there's a better way with ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's powerful technology zeroes in on people with the correct skills and experience for your job and actively invites these people to apply. It's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See for yourself. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Vox. That's ZipRecruiter.com/VOX. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenue's minor league podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing? I assume that you're doing better than Bobby Witt?
Yes. I'm currently not demoted to the minor leagues yet.
So that's good. Lucas, Ken, you guys got demoted?
Yep, got demoted. I'm back to single A.
In life, yeah.
That does sound about right. All right, so promote, extend, trade this week. I was looking at Wikipedia for, you know, important stuff that happened on today's day, and I saw this name, and I vaguely remembered it from, you know, history class at some point or another. So are you guys familiar with Anne Hutchinson, by any chance?
The author?
No.
Anne Hutchinson. The name's about this lady. I'll be like, oh, yeah, that person.
Correct. That's exactly what I felt. I was like, wait, I know this name from something. Any of you other guys?
I think I know who you're talking about, so I'm currently Googling to make sure if I'm right.
Got to check.
Name sounds very familiar.
Well,
oh, she was a religious freedom person. Okay.
Yes. So
Rhode Anne Hutchinson, Island?
Yes, she.
Yeah.
She was in Rhode Island.
That's it. Providence and all that. Okay.
Yep. So yeah, she was a charismatic Puritan from the Massachusetts Bay Colony.
Who among us isn't?
Exactly. And her religious views were deemed unorthodox by the Puritans. So her husband, her family, they were all banished from the Massachusetts Bay Colony after being put on trial. And they eventually settled in Providence, and then they settled around what is now Pelham Bay, where the local Indians then slaughtered her and her family about a year later.
Oh, good. Nice.
Oh, no.
So it was on this date back in 1638 that she was exiled from Massachusetts. So in honor of her, what Hall of Famers who were sent from Boston to the Bronx are we going to promote, extend, or trade? I thought it was a little long-winded, but the end point is a good one.
You got there. Yeah, we got there eventually.
Though. Obviously, Babe Ruth, but we can't include him because he's a game-breaker. So, first off, we have right-handed pitcher Wade Hoyt, who was traded to the Yankees in 1920. And over the course of a little over 2,000 innings from 1921 and 1930, he posted a 3.48 ERA, and he helped them win 3 World Series. Next, we have Red Ruffing, who was traded from Boston to the Yankees in 1930, and over the course of a little over 3,000 innings from 1930 to 1946, he had a 3.47 ERA, and he helped them win 6 World Series championships in 32, 36, 37, 38, 39, and 41. And finally, we have Sparky Lyle, who was traded to them in 1972, and he posted a 2.41 ERA in about 745 innings from 1972 to 1978, and he helped them win 2 World Series in 1977 and 1978. And I have all their stats over here in front of me if you need to look at, if you want to know something or other.
I wanted to go with Sparky Lyle just because this dude's name is Sparky.
It's a good
Actually, that
fun
could.
Fact. Sparky Lyle was the manager of the Somerset Patriots for many years, and somewhere in my parents' house, I have a Sparky Lyle as a dog.
Bobby nice. So,
I think I'm going to extend him for solely that reason.
That seems reasonable.
No, he won a Cy Young, Mr. Sparky.
Yeah, he is the only one of the three that has a Cy
Young. How the hell did this dude win a Cy Young?
Wins.
Not even, because he
no,
was
he's a reliever.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He saved 35 games.
Saves with a bunch of Z's at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Edwin Diaz is going to win the Cy Young this year.
He's the kind of reliever who throws 100-plus innings, and he did that several times. What year did he win the Cy Young?
77.
Look who's number two on that list, and number three. How did these guys...
77... Cy Young AL.
You have in second place is Jim Palmer, and in third place, Nolan Ryan.
What the fuck?
Yeah, but give it to a good old Sparky.
3 points. Which of these is not like the other? 3.7, 7.3, 7.8.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not always supposed to just line up the wars, but I think in this case, we can line up the wars.
And if you want to get really weird... Using advanced statistics, look who came in ninth place that year. Frank Tanna and his war, 8.3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
70's not the smartest baseball people, I think it's fair to say.
He also, according to Baseball Reference, came in sixth in the MVP voting that year.
Isn't even good. He's
ahead of Thurman Munson, Carl Fisk, Reggie Jackson. George Brett.
Do the people watching these games have eyes? Are we out of touch?
Clearly not, because they thought that Sparky Lyle was a dog, so.
Jesus.
He pitched in 72 games. What more do you want out of your Cy Young?
Good pitching in slightly fewer games? I don't know.
I mean, this is back in the day when your starters pitched a lot of the games. So Lyle, he appeared in 72 games, but Palmer started 39, and
yeah,
Ryan
exactly.
started 37. You know?
It's hardly even like a leg up.
Was that like when relievers were still kind of a new thing?
And yeah.
So I mean, everybody was just kind of amazed, like, oh, wow.
The late 70s is kind of when like that fireman thing. Yeah.
Anyway, I have no connection to this dude, but the Sparky as a dog is a good promotion. So yeah, I guess extending him does make sense.
Oh yeah, I'm extending Sparky.
All right, now who's getting traded and who's just getting promoted? I mean, Red Ruffing or Wade Hoyt?
Who had the least rings? Because I know you said one of them had six.
Red Ruffing had six, and Wade Hoyt had three. But
get
Wade
Hoyt out of here.
Hoyt is from Brooklyn, though.
Oh, come on. Now you're tugging at the hometown heartstrings for me, mm-hmm. So he has to stay.
Exactly.
Red Ruffing, pretty good, though. Is Red Ruffing a Hall of Famer? Should be.
Yes.
Borderline, yeah, 56 wins, yeah. I love that you can amass, I'll join in with the extend the hometown Brooklynite, obviously. But I love that you could have a career in the 20s, 30s, early 40s, not even early 40s. This guy pitched from 1924 to 1947. Be an effective starter and mass up 56 wins with a K9 of 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, his best year, 1938, when he was an all-star and he came in fourth place in the MVP race, he had a walk rate of 3 and a strikeout rate of 4.6.
Wait, Hoyt was a Brooklyn Dodger? He went to Erasmus? Yeah, he's definitely staying. I know two of those things.
He is one of the, I mean, the Mets didn't exist at the time, but he is one of the few that was a Dodger, he was a Giant, and he was a Yankee.
No, unfortunately, the correct answer might be to just trade all three of them because they're all Yankees. So, you know.
There's that, too.
Also, I'm on Hoyt's Wikipedia now, which... Uh-huh. He was a Dodgers fan. He signed as a Giant at 15.
Hell yeah.
And was nicknamed the Schoolboy Wonder.
That's pretty good.
all incredible things. That, like,
I'm extending him because of that.
I want him to be like, when he's like 50, they're calling him the schoolboy wonder, and he's like, guys, I'm not a schoolboy anymore.
He's like, guys, the school, I don't have a basic education anymore. Thanks.
No, I think this might violate that pre-six, no contracts before 16. Yeah, baseball got to look into this. You know, cold case, but open it back up.
I'm going to go back and just posthumously take away his Hall of Fame.
He was also known as the Merry Mortician because he spent his days working as a funeral director and at nights appearing in vaudeville. This dude's incredible.
What is this guy?
This is an incredible baseball. See, early baseball is crazy.
Oh, yeah. Early baseball is undefeated with all this crazy stuff.
Can't make some of that up. All right, so we are currently at a point in the year where there really is not too much baseball going on that's relevant to us. All the minor league guys we'd normally be covering, they were cut or reassigned from spring training. They're not really going to be doing too much until the Mets break camp and head north, and then the minor leaguers get in, you know, a month of camp in April. The only real non-major league baseball stuff going on right now in the U.S. is high school and college baseball. And the story of the week is really one thing. From Complex to Queens, 2019 draft crush, Jack Leiter, throwing a no-hitter.
Man.
He walked his first batter, and then 27 up, 27 down, and Vandy beat the South Carolina Gamecocks. Threw 81 of his 124 pitches for strikes. He struck out 16, and he was already having a pretty good season, but with the no-no factored in now, he has a 0.31 ERA. In 29 innings over 5 starts, with 7 hits allowed, 11 walks, and 49 hits. So
I have two points here. First, can we call it, that's like the Babe Ruth, where you walk the first batter, yell at the umpire, get ejected, and the dude who comes in next throws a perfect game but doesn't get credit for it because... I mean, I guess Leiter walked the first guy, thankfully, so he still gets the no-hitter. Second, can you imagine... You're the best high school baseball player in your town. You go to a Division I school. You're working really hard. You're starting. You might get drafted. You might not. Who knows? And you're looking at the schedule. You're like, oh, we're going to play Vanderbilt this weekend. That means Friday night is Kumar Rocker, and my Saturday night is Jack Leiter.
That's basically when you happen to just get the flu and don't play.
That's when you're like, hey, when you're selling real estate or whatever, you're like, hey, remember when I faced these guys? And everyone's like, no, you didn't, you liar.
I faced like, Jack Leiter like, and Kumar Rocker.
Look at me with my ass 3 miles outside of the box as I bail out on this curveball coming
this
at my head.
98 mile an hour.
Yeah. I was there, though. I started in the box. Just think about how depressing that is, though. Like, I think all of us played some sports at some point, and I don't think any of us were particularly elite athletes. But there's a difference between losing and getting humiliated.
Oh, yeah.
And these poor college kids are just going to get show up and get humiliated for 2 nights in a row.
I mean, like, it even happens on, like, a smaller scale, and it's bad. Like, I played volleyball in college, and... We moved into a different conference our senior year, and our senior year we played like schools that like recruited D3 volleyball, and we were not recruited for D3 volleyball. And you would just like we would go like travel to like Jersey to play Keene and all this stuff, and we're just gonna get smashed. Like we know on the way there we're about to like just get run out of the building and by their backups. And you know what's coming because I have a squad of like 20 kids and they're all really good and we're like, oh boy. So like, it's fun to talk about it now, but on the way there, you're just like, I think I hurt my ankle. I can't play.
But the craziest thing is he no-hit South Carolina, which is like one of the best offensive teams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not even like a scrub.
not only that, literally Jack Leiter's first in-conference game.
Oh, yeah.
Because they didn't play any last year.
He's good.
Yeah.
I think he might be good.
South Carolina currently ranked 16th in the top 25.
I'm speaking yeah, Al
particularly
somehow.
Good
I'm speaking Al somehow getting him to Queens into existence.
It's not
so I don't think it's in the cards, bud.
Look, who is the GM of the Pirates? Is it still Neil Huntington?
Or
is
Ben Sherrington?
I don't know. They're all yes. generic.
I would say, like, let's just take the most expensive four contracts off of their hands in exchange for.
So if you were
that's
the Pirates,
like $2 million in cap hit.
They don't have any contracts.
No, it's like four guys on the league minimum.
If you are the Pirates and you have the first pick, and Rocker and Leiter are both sitting there, obviously Rocker. Well, you're the first pick, so obviously everybody's sitting there. But Rocker is there and Leiter is pick. Who do you go with? I feel like
Leiter.
It is a legit tough decision at this point.
It is.
I'm not sure it is for me.
I think I lean Rocker, but I wouldn't be mad if either. Like, if I'm a Pirates fan and that's the dilemma you're facing. There's no wrong answer, I think, between the two.
No,
it's
the wrong
not like
answer is watch is being a Pirates fan, but
well, yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, that's a whole other can of worms.
But I think it's Leiter personally.
I think it's Leiter. I think the fastballs are very, very close now. Like Leiter's, particularly yesterday, he was throwing like 95 to 98 throughout.
Yeah.
I think the secondary. The first secondary pitch is better, and I'm not sure if Rocker has a third pitch. So, Leiter having a slider to complement the fastball and the curveball, which arguably don't need it, I think you can make a case that Leiter's the better pitcher at this point in time.
Now, another case to be made. Leiter is obviously getting some well-deserved hype. And helium and everything like that. But at the time when he was drafted in 2019, basically the 1 and the 1A of prep pitchers was Jack Leiter and a fellow right-handed pitcher, Matthew Allen. Mm. Allen, we have not, you know, he threw a couple of innings in 2019, and then we have not really seen anything of him since. We've heard, you know, some good reviews from the alternate site camp in Coney Island and spring training and everything like that, but we don't really know how he's changed physically. We don't really know how he's developed his pitches. So it might seem right now that Leiter now is heads and shoulders better than Allen and that it's, you know, no contest, but Allen could, you know, break camp and start the season like similarly to how Leiter is, you know, dominating the NCAA right now.
Yeah, I don't think it's
me.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah. So for me, I watched the game yesterday and like, what are the chances that this kid, like he's basically mowing down an A-ball lineup like it's nothing. Yeah. What are the chances that Allen is quite this good at this point? You know?
50-50.
We're about to find out when he faces real A-ball lineups, like,
yeah,
in a month.
But, like, you know, just the level of dominance, I think I'm going to lean towards Leiter is probably the better
oh,
prospect
yeah,
at this point.
I think there was an argument at the time. Like the one knock on Leiter was the frame, and I'm sure there's a longer discussion to have about whether we overemphasized frame when discussing pitchers and how they're going to develop. I don't think choosing Allen was the wrong decision in
no,
retrospect.
I don't think so either. Mm-mm.
Just the way, like, there's a lot of ways it could have gone for both of them. It seems to be going generally well for Allen. It's just that it also seems to be going insanely well for Leiter.
I mean, I also don't think Leiter would have signed.
Right,
and
exactly.
Allen,
yeah.
Like, Allen seemed to be very down to some. Well, obviously he was down to sign because he did. But, Allen was rumored for a few other people, where in 2019 it was like, Leiter's not signing, he's going to Vanderbilt, so why even waste
Leiter's
the time?
Leiter's only signing if you back up the dump truck.
Yeah, and like, and good for him, because now he's going to be probably one of the first two picks in the draft, like unless something crazy happens. But
I said it at the time that he's probably going to be a top two pick in a couple of years.
He's made him, as long as he stays healthy through this season, he's made his money. He's made more money than he would have taking that. So good for him. It was a good decision for him. Yep. But I don't think the Mets would have even signed him, and then we're looking at a whole different farm system at that point.
Yeah, I mean, let's say they did pick Leiter, then obviously there would be no Beatty. They probably would not. Well, not, I shouldn't say probably. 95% they would not have picked Josh Wolf because they did have to go a little bit over slot to get him. And then obviously the whole thing with Allen would not have happened because the money just wouldn't have been there because it would have been allocated to Leiter. So.
And then do you get Lindor? Because right. Wolf was an integral part of that trade. So would you rather have – I mean, this is also, like, super pedantic. Like, this argument is crazy. But would you rather have Lindor or Matthew Allen? You know what I mean? like the dominoes from it are so – there's so many.
Yep.
Even though in terms of, like, they barely pulled off Matt Allen.
Yeah.
Like
– yes.
they scraped the bot. They saved as much as they could after that. Like after you know, day one of the draft, like they would not have been able to offer any more money than they did to Allen.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Leiter was even possible.
Yeah, I agree.
Given their pool.
So all this draft talk and college baseball talk makes me think that today is a good day for the second annual Way Too Early Draft Special.
Hooray! And air horns.
No, I love those things. Last time we did this, the world basically came to an end a couple weeks later. So here's hoping that that doesn't happen again. But when we did do this last time, Thomas's pick, Pico Armstrong, he was selected by the Mets. So maybe Tommy Tannis is one of our handful of listeners, and he's waiting for our input before making his draft board.
All I got to say is no one has ever seen me and Tommy Tannis in the same room.
That's true.
True.
That's true. I've been in the same room as you, but Tommy Tannis was conspicuously absent.
Exactly. He was invited, too.
Makes you wonder.
Of course he was. Friend of the podcast, Tommy Tannis.
So the Mets will be making the 10th overall pick this year, thanks to a 26-34 record last year, 2020. During the year, last year, there were some discussions that the draft would be based on 2019 and 2020 records, which would have been detrimental to the Mets since they did all right in 2019. But thankfully, Major League Baseball decided to just go with the 2020 season only, and Mets will be making the 10th pick. Obviously, especially right now, nothing is static. We're talking about this. It's the end of March, and the draft this year is going to be in July. They've pushed it back a little bit because of everything crazy going on in the minor leagues with regards to all the changes there. So players who are in the conversation right now, they could, you know, suddenly and inexplicably just stop performing or get injured and drop. That's basically what happened to JT Ginn last year. He was a guy that was like a mid-first round talent, and he had an injury, and he had Tommy John surgery, and then he fell to the second round, and the Mets picked him. And conversely, guys who are right now considered lesser talents all of a sudden might just start dominating and then find themselves in the discussion, and that's pretty much what happened to Justin Dunn a couple of years ago. He was converted from relief into a starter for about a month or so into the 2016 season. And he was just pretty good. He was dominant, and the Mets liked what they saw, and they picked him 19th overall. 10th overall pick, I think it's a pretty solid place to be picking from. We like to say that groupings and tiers, it's more accurate than just kind of ordinal listings. And with the 10th overall pick, the Mets are making a selection from a pool of players that are still more or less the cream of the crop. Obviously, you know, your first three players or so, they're the best of the best. And 4 to 10, they're like a tier down. But you still have some of the best, you know, the best college pitcher, the best prep pitcher, the best prep hitter, stuff like that. It's, you know, once you get below 10, 12, whatever, that you start to get into that guys with warts territory, which the Mets have made selections from pretty much the last 5 years.
Which explains the minor league system.
Yes.
Well, that partially.
Yes.
So, Thomas, since you got it right last year, how about you share your follow for this year?
So about the crystal ball, give it a good polish there, and what do you see in the ball?
So if I get this one right, because Jaden Hill from LSU, college pitcher, righty, is supposed to probably go a little earlier than the Mets are picking, but I'm mostly choosing him because I like him a lot, like I just like his game. He throws in the high 90s. He has a very good changeup. Like, his changeup is nasty. And that's one of the things that always, whenever I see a college pitcher who has something like that, it always kind of piques my interest because the changeup is usually the last thing to come along for young kids. It's always he has the fastball and the breaking ball, but he has to develop the changeup. And that's why Allen is so exciting, because it seems that he already has the changeup. And Jaden Hill already has it. Like, you see it in college. It's like low 80s, and it has like the nice little dives away from the lefties and into the right. It's just, it's a very nice sinking little changeup. And so the reason why I like someone like this, and the reason why it would be fun for the Mets to draft someone like this, is it's a college pitcher who's you could kind of get him on the track a little quicker to go to the majors than a prep arm, which the Mets like to draft. So if you do that, then all of a sudden the pitching depth in the minors is a lot nicer with Allen and Hill at the top of it, and maybe Allen and Hill kind of slotting in behind DeGrom in as his contract goes. So yeah, that's really the person that I'm keeping an eye on, and it's a lot of it is because I just like watching him pitch. Like, it's hard to predict at 10, and getting Pete Crow Armstrong right is something that I very much was laughing at as soon as they drafted him, because I was like, how the hell did I do that? But he's just a guy that I like watching, and it's having a changeup like that already that's advanced and probably his best pitch is something that just is very juicy for me as someone who likes changeups quite a bit.
So
I agree with that.
I don't disagree with your premise there. I have maybe I should call it the Rafael Montero fear. So I feel like a lot of times we wind up slightly overrating fastball changeup guys as they're developing. Because
I know where you're going, but yeah,
like at that level, no one has a changeup basically, and then then they just make hitters look like fools because they've never seen a changeup that's even half decent. But by the time they get to the majors, being just fastball changeup is concerning. Now, he's not Rafael Montero, right? He has high end velocity, which a lot of those fastball changeup guys don't.
Yeah.
But that always gives me some pause, but I imagine you could look at it the other way too, right? Where most guys, the last thing they're able to develop is a changeup, and everyone seems to be able to pick up a slider at this point. So, like, two sides of that coin.
And like,
if he's there at 10, yes, please.
Oh yes, if he's there at 10, they better be running, sprinting to the phone to call that in, because like I see a lot of mocks of him going like 5, 6, 7. Yep. So like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he falls to 10. Like, it's not like me picking, oh, I'm picking Jack Leiter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
uh-huh.
Like, I'm picking someone who could fall if something happens, if he has kind of a weak season or he gets hurt, knock on wood. You know, like, there's reasons that you could fall from 5 to 10, not really from 2. But, yeah, and also, like, Montero's a closer now somehow. So, like.
Closer.
Look, he's a pretty good reliever now, somehow.
It's like league average. He's just mediocre.
I'll take that. But yes, like, I understand that fear. I just like it because it's fun to see an advanced changeup at an early age when that is uncommon. It's usually something else.
Well, like you said, if the Mets take him, if the Mets pick him, I would be giddy.
Yes.
That's the really cool thing about picking 10, too, is like, one of these guys will likely fall.
Yeah, like
high-end upside guys.
You could get someone at 10 that people would be scratching their heads about for some team trying to float the bonuses or whatever they're trying to do. Like,
we got Michael Conforto at 10.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That worked out pretty good.
Support for this episode comes from Locker Room, the app that's changing the way we talk sports. Locker Room is a sports fan's dream come true. It's a live audio platform that lets you connect with other fans, experts, and even the athletes themselves. Locker Room makes it easy to start your own conversations. talk about the latest rumors, takes, news, and teams you care about most. Join massive watch parties for all of your friends to react together in real time as you celebrate a buzzer beater or suffer the agony of a crucial bricked free throw. And if you've got a bunch of supremely spicy takes you'd like to fire off, you're in luck. You can even record the conversations if you want and release them as a podcast. So it's time to start thinking about catchy titles. It's all totally free and available at the iOS App Store right now. So go download it today. Locker Room. Changing the way we talk sports.
As the world changes, so does the way we do business. In any scenario, flexibility is a must for companies, but this year they've had to be extra flexible. The renaissance of remote work, the endless pivots, you name it. So when it comes to finding new employees during this time, you can be thankful that ZipRecruiter is making hiring faster and easier. When you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job boards with one click, expanding your search for top-notch employees. Then ZipRecruiter's powerful technology finds people with the right skills and experience for your job and then actively invites those five-star candidates to apply. It's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See for yourself. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Vox. That's ZipRecruiter.com/VOX. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right, so who wants to share their follow next?
Ken.
Sure.
Ken.
So this year I'd like to follow Adrian Del Castillo, a catcher from the University of Miami. Usually I'm down. I don't typically like college catchers as a profile. Like I've seen a lot of guys either touted as, you know, college, you know, good catchers who end up, you know, never learning how to hit. Or the converse, you know, they're like a bat first catcher and they end up having to move off the position. Particularly at Miami, I've seen a few come through.
Zach Collins was Miami, right?
Zach Collins, yeah.
Yes.
Who is going to be kind of my counterpoint to this in a minute. But the thing I like about Del Castillo is I really think he's going to hit. And if it turns out he's not a catcher, I think he's athletic enough to play a corner. That being said, I don't think it's necessarily a lot has been made about him not being able to him having loud hands and, you know, behind the plate receiving. And I've seen a lot of guys, you know, develop that as a skill as they get closer to the majors. So that doesn't concern me all that much. And like I said earlier, the big, you know, sort of danger with this profile is that, you know, the guy can hit, but can he field? And he's a lot more athletic than a lot of the guys who have been drafted as catchers and had to move off, like Matt Face from Virginia a couple years ago. I think he's more athletic than him. He's certainly more athletic than Zach Collins.
Are you sure about that one?
most are. Thomas.
Zach Collins is, how you would say, a beefy boy.
Is he more athletic than
small?
Is he more athletic than noted catcher turned outfielder Kyle Schwarber?
Yes.
Oh, gee.
Again, hard not to be. Current Washington National, Kyle Schwarber.
Speaking of, are they playing him in left and pushing Soto to right?
Yes.
Oh God, you talk about our outfield defense. That's
I know.
Be ugly. Yes. At least they have Robles. Anyway.
And I really think Del Castillo is going to hit. It's like a really pretty open left-handed swing. It's pretty loose. You can see him adjust mid-swing. And there's enough feel to hit and enough, you know, raw strength there where he's going to hit, you know, probably for like average power at the very least. So I'm pretty high on him. He's another guy I think might go a little higher than 10, but there's going to be a lot of noise this year, a lot of movement. So who knows? He might be around.
If you take the average of Fangraphs and Baseball America, he's at 10.
Yeah, so that'd be cool.
He's a very interesting player.
I wouldn't have any problems if he was drafted.
No, it seems fine.
Lefty catcher, sign me up. No batting gloves.
Also, like a sign me pretty, up. Yeah, the aesthetics of his game are solid too.
Lefty catcher, I'm sold now. Like, yes, yes please.
He's a lefty hitter, but yeah.
Oh,
which is also a good thing to have because there's a million righty catchers and like him, like the thing with Tomas Nito is you'd like to be able to platoon him if you ever have to rely on him as number one.
Yeah,
as something like a starter. So it is now, an advantage, even if it's not fun.
I wanted that lefty throwing catcher just for the weirdness factor.
Carlos Cortez, learn to catch. Left-handed.
Yeah. Well, hey, he should do whatever he can to add value.
Yeah.
Now, Ken, you are obviously a fan of Del Castillo. And if the Mets pick him, he would be a big catching prospect in the system. And you are also a fan of the other big catching prospect in the system, Francisco Alvarez. So should they both be in the system, who are you going to be the bigger fan of?
100%
yes. Oh, okay, I see.
I don't know. That's tough.
Sophie's choice.
Probably Del Castillo for a little bit, just because Alvarez is, you know, has yet to play full season ball.
Mm.
And I don't know if you want to bet on a catcher who has never played full season ball to, you know. Like Alvarez, well, that's about his
potential. I've got this great bridge to sell you if you're interested in a proposition like that.
Like not so much. Who do you think is going to pan out better? Just whose jersey are you buying?
Oh, both. Easy.
Oh, okay, that works out then.
Well, the platoon is going to be the best catcher in baseball combined. So,
yeah,
true.
All of the wins above replacement.
Not one win below replacement.
No.
All right, Lucas, do you want to go or do you want to go last?
I'll go.
All right.
So admittedly, when I first did this, I was an idiot and was like, oh, yeah, the Mets will probably be pretty good. They'll be a 20th this year, forgetting that, you know, this year's draft picks are not based on this year's record. So trade me, I guess. Anyway, once I corrected that and found a guy, I'm going to go with Brady Hoose, whatever. He's a prep shortstop slash third baseman from Georgia, so baseball hotbed. I'm sure the Braves are eyeing him eagerly because they love picking their local boys. He's already 6'3", 215, so it seems pretty likely he'll have to move to third base. But he's got the power to do it, like potential 70-grade juice in that bat long term. Like a lot of prep guys, he sometimes will flail at off-speed stuff, but he has a better approach than you'd expect, more mature approach than you'd expect. Throws 96 off the mound, so I don't have any concerns about him not sticking at third. Like, I think that'd be fine. And if the bat comes through, it's a special player even there. I think you're kind of very similar to that quadrant idea I've mentioned with Ronnie Mauricio, where you can, like, have a four corners outcome where he's an elite hitting shortstop, a shortstop who just hits okay, an elite hitting third baseman, or a third baseman who just hits okay, right? I think you're throwing another dart into that square, and maybe he winds up as that elite hitting shortstop. They're not on the Mets because they're going to extend Francisco Lindor, right? Right, guys?
Yeah.
Right?
Thomas, right. What's your read on the situation?
Well, you know, I'm very negative, but
all right,
they probably do it anyway and make me look stupid.
Good.
So yeah, House would be my guy there. Later on, I was looking at names like Ethan Wilson, who's a college outfielder, or Joshua Baez. So we're early enough in the draft process where some of these guys could improve their stock. So I'll call those my secondary watches for now. But right now, Brady House would be the primary one.
The last prep shortstop that the Mets picked does not leave a good taste in my mouth.
See, the difference between this and Cheech is that the profile is entirely
completely
different. Yeah.
You draft that guy.
Cicchini?
Lucchese, whatever. Because you wanted a fast-moving, solid defender, but you're drafting a prep bat. So, like, that fundamentally doesn't make sense. Here, you're drafting this guy for upside. He's not going to move fast, but the upside is there, right? There's the power potential and the hit potential that Zucchini never had. And maybe he's less likely to land at short long-term relative to when Zucchini was drafted, but the bat potential is so much better. And if you're drafting a prep guy, go for upside. Don't go for safety.
You know, Lucas, I'm detecting a lot of anti-Italian discrimination coming out of you.
Uh-huh. It's from the Italian. I literally, right before we got on the pod today, got off the phone with my grandma, and we were talking about tricks to making good red sauce for a half hour. So, I'm not even joking. This is a conversation that I had right before the pod.
Well, you see, I don't believe your story at all, because if you're a real Italian, you would know that it's gravy,
okay,
not sauce.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I've literally no one in my family has ever referred to it as gravy. We're all fake Italians.
Maron. All right, well, that leaves me, and the guy that I'm interested is Judd Fabian, and I'm very, very sad that it's not Jude, because the Hey Jude headlines have been easy.
I'm disappointed it's not Fabio.
Oh, man,
I'm disappointed
Jude
it's not Job.
There's a lot of all the different variations it could be. Judd, I mean, come on.
Jeb?
Come on,
our everyone's favorite politician, Jeb.
please hit.
Please clap.
Please drive.
So, Judd Fabian, he's an outfielder from the University of Florida. He graduated from high school early, and he's very young as a result. He actually is still 20. He won't turn 21 until September, even though he is a junior.
The reverse Brett Batty. Baby.
Yes, reverse Batty. He's actually younger than Batty.
That's hysterical.
I didn't want to bring that up, but he is. I looked it up. His freshman year at Florida was a little touch and go, but he didn't make a fool of himself. And he actually tied for the team lead in walks and stolen bases, which is pretty good as literally an 18-year-old that was still in high school like 2 weeks prior. So this summer he went to the Cape, and he was actually one of the better players there. Despite being the only 18-year-old, he ended up in the top 10 in doubles and home runs, slugging percentage. And everything looked like it was finally clicking last year. In his sophomore year, he was hitting for better average, hitting for power, drawing walks. But then Corona shut everything down, so that was that. But through 17 games this year, it looks like he's picked back up where he's left off. He has not missed a step. And he is actually hitting .289, .379, .627 through 20 games. And his 8 homers lead the Gators. And they are second in the SEC between Wes Clark from South Carolina. And if you see him hit, it's easy to get why he has so many home runs. And, you know, he's just a slugger. It's a pretty quiet setup and just a smooth right-handed swing. And it's not like crazy uppercut, but just a very natural looking uppercut. The thing with him is that he can get jumpy and he can, you know, take some bad swings, especially against breaking balls. But, you know, that's why he's a college player. That's why will be in the minor leagues. He's not a major leaguer yet, and it happens. When he makes solid contact, though, he hits shots, really high exit velocity. It's not just, like, pull-side power, though. He has the ability to hit shots back up to, like, center or even go slightly opposite way. And just the thing with him is he really comes to the plate with a plan, and he really knows his strike zone very well. As an 18-year-old fresh out of high school, you know, he was facing SEC pitching, and he had a 13.5 walk percentage in his freshman year. Obviously, last year, 2020, was shortened, but he bumped that up to 16%. And then this year, right now, it's a 12.7 through those 20 games. So developing a good eye usually takes some time, but that's something that, you know, he seems to have right now. And that, you know, it's a good floor to have, because it's always something he could fall back on when, you know, if he's not hitting that well or is in a power drought or whatever. And then on the other side of the plate, defensively, he's surprisingly solid in center field. He's a good runner. You know, he's athletic. And he's probably not going to be putting on like 50 pounds of muscle in a year or two. So he should be able to maintain that speed, which is about average to above average or so. So he's got that going for him. He reads the ball off the bat pretty well. He's got a quick first step, an above average arm. So he's got all that going for him. And basically he just needs to work on, you know, his roots. And that just comes with more experience and coaching and everything like that. So he's got all the tools to be a solid center fielder. And yeah, he's an advanced college bat, maybe the most well-rounded of all of the upper echelon guys. You know, he's going to hit for average, power, speed, you know, all the tools. Should be an impact contributor. And if the Mets draft him, he will be the second guy that is, I don't even know what it's called, where you throw left-handed, but you're actually right-handed. Not ambidextrous, but I don't know, whatever you would call it. But he'd be the second guy on the team with Carlos Cortez to throw weird.
Well, that's not that's a good grouping, Steve. No, not a good, hey, this guy's like Carlos
that's
Cortez.
That's friend of the podcast, Carlos Cortez.
Well, I didn't say that his bat is anything like Carlos Cortez or his defense, just that they both throw weirdly.
Here's a total non sequitur. I'm in a very complicated fantasy league with Jarrett and others, and I had some dude offer me Carlos Cortez, who he thought was a real prospect. I'm like, no. No.
All right, well.
You should have told him he's a friend of the podcast, so you have to get him for cheap.
Uh-huh.
Have him.
Uh-huh.
That's AVL slugging champion Carlos Cortez.
Oh, my God.
Or batting champion, whatever it was. But yeah, I think that Fabian might be available to the Mets at 10.
Honestly,
I like Fabian.
Yeah, me too.
I worry about he's been striking out a lot this year.
I know it's scary. When I first
but I
started,
think that might be why he's available.
Exactly. If he wasn't striking out, he might not be there at 10. So.
Similar to like, you remember Cameron Meisner, the guy we both really liked a couple years ago?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's basically why he fell, and he's turned into a decent prospect, if I recall correctly. But I think Fabian's probably a little better. They're probably a lot better.
A lot of times when guys get drafted and go to a professional club, they have their everything just broken down, and you're starting from scratch because the goals of a professional team and their teaching is very different from a college coaching staff and their goals.
Yeah, and also I've heard just excellent things about him as a defender.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice with that bat, and if he could defend the way that you would think he can, then that would be a very, very nice little package to have.
That gives him a pretty like high floor in that, you know, if he's a good defensive outfielders are always good to have around.
Yeah.
And a ton of upside in that, you know, he hits balls to the moon when he squares them up.
That'll always play as a bench guy, even if, like,
I saw him take the ball on the outer half of the plate, probably like 40 feet over the fence a couple of days ago against A&M. Just very impressive.
This is extremely my shit.
Outfielders
with
college outfielders, man.
College outfielders with strikeout issues, but walks and power. Son of a bitch, I'm in.
And I think
Lucas will put them at every position. Go behind.
Yes, I will put this player at every position. I mean, this is Garrett Mitchell.
It is.
Bradley Zimmer, who I kind of at the time liked over Conforto because you could play center, and that was a bad take. But like, same vein. More college outfielders.
Honestly, the Mets are going to get someone fun at 10, and
that's
like. Obviously, I'd rather them be good and pick last and win the World Series, but I'd rather them pick here than when they were picking at, like, 15, and I'm like, I don't care about any of it. Like, at least in the top 10, even if 10 is the worst part of the top 10, obviously, it's someone that's going to be good in the system and someone that'll be someone to pay attention to, you know?
So, mm-hmm.
There's at Psycho least Singh. A 10% chance you get one of the 10 best players.
I mean, and that's fine. Like
I like those odds.
It's a joke, but also, like, at 15, it's a hell of a lot smaller. So
yeah, at 15, it's like 1%, you know?
Yeah.
There's a chance that you can get, like, one of the two or three best players in the draft if somebody just makes a mistake ahead of you.
And, I mean, Conforto, like we said before, Conforto was the 10th pick, and if we get a Michael Conforto, like, level player out of that pick, then sign me up.
Yeah. Maybe that's the extra argument to taking a college outfielder here. The last time the Mets took a college outfielder at 10, pretty good.
Part of my philosophy is, like, if the you know, I've said many times on this podcast and elsewhere that Michael Conforto is, like, my ideal draft pick.
Yep.
Like a polished college hitter, you don't have to do much, and he's just gonna, you know, he just gets it.
Yeah.
Part of the reason, so Del Castillo I like, and also Jed Fabian is, you know, I think they might be the best college hitter in the country, and if that guy's available when you're picking, you take them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Especially if the NL is going to get a DH, like, that adds an extra spot of hitting somewhere. Like, if things fall apart, like, obviously I'm not saying either guy is a DH, but, like, that gives you more flexibility on fitting hitters into your lineup.
Mm-hmm. And now, if the Mets pick an advanced college hitter and assign them to Brooklyn, nobody's going to say anything.
Well, Brooklyn must win, Steve. So.
Well, yes, they must, but Brooklyn is high A, so that would be the appropriate place to send players of that vein.
I mean, and theoretically, by the time the draft picks are making their way to Brooklyn, the world will be back to normal enough, and we can go see them. So that'd be cool.
Oh, yeah.
Knock on wood.
I'm train stops away from Brooklyn, so.
I am more train stops away
from Brooklyn. You're a train line.
I'm not that far from Brooklyn now.
How do I get to the Cyclone Stadium from where I am? I'd probably take the A down to 42nd and then
take the F.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not awful.
Mm-mm.
Well, now everyone knows where you live, Lucas.
They know I live somewhere on the A line. Oh, no.
Oh, the A line, the longest line.
Yep.
All right. Well, now the Will Ponder of the Week. And that belongs to Captain Jay Baker of the Cherokee County Sheriffs in Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Have you guys ever had a bad day by any chance? Lucas, have you ever had a bad day?
Yeah, yes, Steve. Turns out when I have a bad day, I don't go out and kill 8 people.
Ah, Ken, how about you?
Yeah, no, when I have a bad day, I, like, eat a bunch of stuff.
All right. Thomas?
Oh, I just sit in my room and play video games all day.
All right. Well, according to Mr. Baker, according to Captain Baker, Robert Long, the guy that murdered 8 people in cold blood the other day, he was, quote, this is the exact quote here, he was pretty much fed up and had been kind of at the end of his rope. And yesterday was a really bad day for him, and this is what he did. The fuck?
Yeah. Look, we just made some jokes because I think we're the kind of people who handle this stuff with humor, which I don't know that that's a good or bad thing, but this whole situation is awful. The larger cultural implications of it are even worse. And this jackass goes out here and says something like this, and then also has a history of posting blatantly anti-Asian stuff online.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's a racist and sympathize with the racist guy. So here we are. Like, that's all that is.
Pretty much, yep, that is all that it is. Fuck the shooter, and fuck this cop, too.
Yep, and if you have the ability to, not a bad time to go donate to any of the excellent organizations fighting Asian American discrimination.
Agreed.
If you have the ability to financially, don't feel awful if you can't. There's other things you can do.
Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at elvlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91, and Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from, rate and review it, and of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
Support for this episode comes from ClickUp. If it feels like there aren't enough hours in your workday, it's probably because there aren't. We're losing valuable time to productivity pitfalls, like switching between apps to track down deliverables, finding due dates, and communicating with our teams. Get your hours back and your work on track with ClickUp. ClickUp is a flexible productivity platform where you can prioritize tasks, collaborate on docs, chat with your team, and track goals, all in one place. It's completely customizable, and it's free forever. So try ClickUp today at clickup.com/Vox.